Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, April 17th, 2023. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often because primarily it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we'd be happy if you would do that by calling 563-999-3581. Once you do that, press the number 1 on your phone, and it will put the icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll see that you want to have a conversation. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work is to be of service. And that's far easier to do when we know what is serving you and what you would get the most benefit from in our sharing. You can either call in and ask to be shown how to go through a worksheet process or frame out some worksheet process, or we can review worksheets you've done. Or you can ask a clarifying point about the dynamics process that make it so effective. And if you don't want to call in person, or you're listening through the archives and you're not listening in person, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get an email from you, we will address the comment or question on the show, and then as time allows, send you an email or a notification about what day and time that was addressed so you can go back and listen to the feedback. So we have plenty of time for comments and questions, 563-999-3581. And this is the prime time to call, although many people wait until near the end of the show to press one on their phone. I'm told by the Blog Talk Radio people that the chat room has been closed by the administrator and is no longer available. So here's hoping that if you're listening and you were hoping to chat in the chat room, I have not had, for months now, I have not had a consistent way to sign in to that chat room. But now I'm actually getting the message that says it's been closed by the administrator, which is either Blog Talk Radio themselves or Jeannie Rice. So either give us a call or send us an email. It's been a blessedly busy weekend for me. I've been reviewing more of the essays by, you know, from the book A Walk in the Physical, and the essays, you know, if you say by Christian Sundberg, then you kind of miss the point, because what he's saying is he is not smart enough to write this stuff, that he's being told what to write for these 100 and some essays. And I would have to say the way they hold together, it reminds me very much of The Way of Mastery and A Course in Miracles. And it's been my experience that I personally have never encountered an individual who was bright enough to write a book like Course in Miracles or The Way of Mastery and have it be so consistent and cross-referential and more like a fractal than any kind of a linear thought process. So I tend to give credence to what Christian is saying here, that he was inspired, you might say divinely inspired. He was channeling this. He was guided to write this. And the kind of thing that is so in line with what we've been doing with The Course in Miracles, Dr. Michael Rice's work, and The Way of Mastery. Here's essay number 14 titled, You Have the Power. And this essay reads, fundamentally, what we are is conscious awareness. This is who and what you are, conscious awareness. Sidebar here, I remember hearing years ago when I was starting to read about spirituality at different levels, heard about a guru whose entire teaching consisted of asking his students, endlessly asking the same question, who are you? And with the deeper and deeper exploration into their own sense of an answer to that question, they grew spiritually. They grew in their own awareness. They grew away from thinking that they were just their ego or whatever their ego would say about them. So here's the very first line in the 14th essay by Christian Sundberg that reads, titled, You Have the Power. And the first line is, a statement about who or what you are. Fundamentally, what you are is conscious awareness. You're not the body. You're not your thoughts about yourself or your body. You're not any history or list of things that you've done over time. Your essence is conscious awareness. The essay goes on and says, fundamentally, what we do in our existence is exercise intent by making choices. We act on our intention by making choices. Put another way, the fundamental substance is consciousness. The fundamental force is intent. These statements are true no matter what reality system we are in and no matter how things may currently appear, quote, outside, close quotes, outside of us. Consciousness may elect to participate in experiences that provide rich constraints. That's a weird word combination for me. Rich constraints in which difficult choices may be made. Physical reality is one of those meaningful constraint sets. So, if you're thinking in terms of your conscious awareness and your intent, there is no constraint. This is like your creativity. You are not constrained at all. You can imagine a flying elephant with 17 heads whose color changes every time it sneezes, right? You're only limited by your willingness to stretch your thought pattern. There are no constraints in your consciousness. So we must have other systems that help us create temporary experience of constraint. So consciousness may elect to participate. It isn't forced. You're not here by force. Your true essence isn't taking form as a human because you had to or because somebody forced you to. You, as conscious awareness, had the choice to elect to participate in experiences which provide rich constraints. Why would we do that? So that difficult choices may be made. Your physical reality, your experience as being on the planet in a physical body, is just one of those meaningful constraint sets. Yet even here, because focus is part of intent, focus itself is a creator of momentum. When we focus on a certain perception, that perception grows. Think about that. Focus itself is a creator of momentum. And when we focus on a certain perception, that perception grows. Physical reality is meant to give us the opportunity to have the experience that our nurtured perceptions yield to us. In other words, we are in a place called physical reality that gives us the opportunity to experience whatever we focus more on. And so if we focus with high intense emotion or emotionality on our poverty or our physical ache or pain, we get more of it. If we focus with high intensity and high emotionality on love and extending love, we feel more love. If we focus with high intensity and high emotionality on anger and bitterness and shame and guilt, we experience more of those. So the physical world is set up with the understanding that intent is a creator of momentum. And when we focus on a certain perception, we have that perception more. It grows. It gets stronger. It gets more intense for us. And physical reality itself is meant to give us the opportunity to experience whatever we have nurtured in our own perceptions, whatever we choose to focus our awareness upon, becomes more and more of our experience of life in this dynamic creative process. The essay goes on and reads, "It is valuable to recognize this phenomenon because it allows us to take back our power." How? How can we take back our power? We can move away from perceiving the world as a place that happens to us and gradually shift our perspective towards recognizing that, in fact, the power lies within us. This may seem like a big leap in such an immersive and challenging environment. Indeed, in this reality, it can take time to institute a substantive internal or even an external change. But we do have the power to change our momentum in every single now moment. Now is always the moment. We can choose now to focus on the good instead of the bad. We can choose now to dwell on the love in the world and not the fear. So my sensibility has me coming back to reading the title of this essay, number 14, You Have the Power, and then rereading the last paragraph that I just read. It is valuable to recognize this phenomenon. What is the phenomenon? The phenomenon that what we focus on, we get more of. And when we focus on a certain perception, that perception grows. It's valuable to recognize this because it allows us to take back our power. How can you take back your power? We can move away from perceiving the world as a place that happens to us and gradually shift our perspective towards recognizing that, in fact, the power lies within us. This may seem like a big leap because we're in a very immersive and challenging environment. Indeed, in this reality, it can take time to make a substantive internal or external change. But we do have the power to change our momentum in every single now moment. Now is always the moment. We can choose now to focus on good instead of bad. We can choose now to dwell on the love in the world and not the fear. We are not powerless to our circumstances, but we are in fact powerful creators who are able even to commit ourselves to the temporary illusion of powerlessness. We are so powerful in our ability to create that we can commit ourselves to the belief and the experience of being powerless. Despite the appearances, we always have the power to change the stage of the play. If you have relinquished your power in your mind, it is okay to take it back. Become familiar with how you are perceiving your experience. Choose to focus on the positive, even as you fully acknowledge and allow what you might have identified as the negative. Your awareness is at the root of it all. Change the momentum of your experience by intentionally choosing what you focus on and how you decide to interpret what happens in your life. As you are consciousness, you have that very real power. And it's time to remember that you do. Area code 610, believe this is Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Boy, are you on a juicy topic. My first thought is, no, I don't. I don't have the power. So
the power
I had a good talk with a whatever I want to do that I'm not doing. Having kindly thoughts towards someone who's living up with us, for instance, who doesn't seem to be measuring up to my requirements. Boy, there's so much to look at for what somebody who's getting a free ride should be doing for their hosts, et cetera. It's like having a person living with us is bringing up all sorts. I feel like a squid who keeps blowing out black ink. And I understand that I can choose otherwise. I understand the theory of it, but right now it feels like a theory. I can intend, and I love it when you read that part about you can be fully aware of the other side of things, but you're choosing this. And that's what I'm doing. I'm choosing and choosing and choosing, but the choosing pretty thin, pretty paltry sometimes. I'm hanging on to a thread of goodwill at times, and I choose to act on that. And once I begin acting on it, there's a little momentum there. You're talking about focus. I bet that's what that is. And things start rolling in a better direction. I'm also wrestling with the idea of that, who is it? I forget who said this famous thing that Michael often brings up, is the highest treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason. Why
right.
am I doing the what? Sorry.
He calls that propitiation.
Yeah. I still don't have a handle on that word. It's a big one. Big word. Yeah. I have a friend, and we often get into these great discussions. And I said, I am wrestling with one of the things that you, Dr. Tim, you said a few days ago, there are going to be some core issues that you're going to be wrestling with until you go to the grave. They're going to be your 77 times 77 times 77ers. It's always going to be something you're working on. And I said to her, I'm sure you have some of those. And she said, oh, yeah. And she named what hers was. And it seemed funny to me that that should be her core issue. And then I thought, well, my core issue probably feels funny to her. And that was a wonderful breath of fresh air into my perception of what I think or believe. It's like, this isn't necessarily right just because I believe it. Look at this other person. It's this my particular thing probably would have no interest for her. It wouldn't be an issue. So we went around on our walk and just talked about what the core issues were. And it was a great discussion, but it still comes back for me as I love the idea of having an intent and focusing, putting energy toward that. But I'm also aware of, it's like the more I go in that direction, the more garbage shows up at the back door. That's pretty much my complaint for the day.
Well, I don't think it's different than anybody else, right? I mean, let me just say it this way. For anybody else who's trying to make their life better, there are all kinds of people that aren't really engaged in trying to make their life better, and so they don't have any problems at all. Hand me another beer.
Right? Okay.
I routinely work with people who they come in and they say, yeah, I had a rough weekend. Oh, what happened? Oh, you know, this and that, but it's okay because I drank a fifth of vodka. I drank a handle, you know, which is more than a fifth. I drank, you know, a case and a fifth. It's not a problem. I had a friend.
Oh, boy.
When I was in college, I had a friend that And he was a friend, you know, as an acquaintance. He was a friend of my sister's. He wasn't like, you know, like a close personal friend of mine, but, you know, I had association with him. And he actually took to wearing a T-shirt that said, "People say I have a drinking problem. I don't have a drinking problem. I drink, I get drunk, I fall down, no problem."
Yeah.
And he thought that was just great. He literally wore that to parties where he got sloppy drunk. And a person like that is not going to have the same kind of experience as someone like you who's choosing, you know, through this level or another level to actively make your life better. But for anybody who's actively trying to make their life better, they're probably going to have core issues that some of their friends chuckle at because, my gosh, you're so intelligent and you're so competent and you're so this and you're that. How could you have struggles with this? Right? It doesn't matter what the thing is. I'm not struggling with the thing. I'm struggling with what my issues are that get resonated by the interpretations I'm placing on, quote, this thing, close quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a wrinkle there, too. It's sort of like being, liking sugar. You know it's bad for you, but the taste of it right then is so powerfully good. And with, if I am walking with a friend and I launch into complaining about someone, I'm getting a kind of frisson. I'm getting this zap. I'm getting a high or something. It's not great, but it is like being fed on a very primitive level.
Okay, but think about it. All right, but think about it this way. What if, and just watch it for yourself. I do not know that this is true for you. But what if what's happening in that moment is you're getting a reprieve from your own negative experience, your own internal pain or discomfort that would come from dealing with your own stuff directly. Dealing with my own stuff directly is not pleasant. It's not pleasant, right? So some people down a handle of vodka or whiskey, and then in that time they're escaping from dealing with their own issue. Some people just take a walk and complain about other people. And in that period of time, they're not in the pain of dealing with their own issue.
Called venting. Oh, yeah. You're
called
right.
Numbing.
I do it.
It's numbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the sugar thing. It's just another drug of choice.
Well, speaking of sugar, and this is a little tangent, but it directly relates, I bet. Michael said, it's always, you know, you have times when you've listened to the radio show, Michael's particularly, you're always bringing in new stuff. Michael goes over his stuff because he's the genius behind his stuff. And of course he's going to review those things and explain those things, but there's usually something in there. And sometimes us oldies who have been on for a while have to hang around and wait for that. And I mean really hang around. You don't multitask. You're listening for that thing. And the thing he said the other day is, you know, our medical situation in this country, we're worse than many other countries in healthcare now. The care is more like sick care rather than healthcare. He said, I really recommend you become your own healthcare provider for the most part. If you have to go get a pill or two at the doctor, no problem. He's not closed-minded about it. But a little light bulb went off, and I thought, you know, I was good over Lent, and I went off sugar. And then when Easter came, of course, I had way too much of all the bad and forbidden stuff. And that, it's like taking it, weakening the system so that the dark stuff gets a bigger handle. And so I've gone on this very, I mean, it's a sensible, but just they call it keto, but it's not extreme. You know what that is probably. Just really low on carbs, lots of vegetables, some fruits, and proteins of various kinds. In one day of doing that, I can feel that, Michael calls it vitality, the vitality is jacking itself up again, and I may be able to have better focus and intent, I should say, intent and focus on what I really want in life, rather than just going around blowing off steam. It's a kind of laziness, physical and mental, that happens. So I'm going on a tangent, so I'll stop.
So congratulations for going back to some healthier eating. And it's just the energy we need to do life, right? I have on a regular basis, I work with people, and they have tremendous expectations for themselves, but they don't consider the context. And if the context is they haven't been eating so well, and or their mother has cancer, and their father's declining, and they're going through a divorce, or, you know, the economy in their area has tanked, and so they have to struggle harder just to make ends meet, and or they belong to a certain group, and that group is having, you know, a falling out, and there's a lot of supporting of friends that has to happen. All of these things are drains of energy. And if you expect yourself to function at some idealistically high level, in all of those contexts without any consideration for how much energy it takes to handle even one of those things, let alone, you know, 5 or 10 of them at the same time, you're just setting yourself up for failure. You're setting expectations that you and no one else could live up to. So the big thing is, as you do this stuff, bigger than eating the sugar is how much are you beating yourself up for eating the sugar? Right? How much energy are you pouring into negative thoughts and judgments about yourself and others, which is draining your system and making it more difficult to focus on the positive, the good, the loving, etc. That's even more powerful than the food you're putting in your mouth. Which isn't to say don't consider anything you put in your mouth. The whole system, you know, fits together. If I'm eating well, sleeping well, doing more of the right things, my vitality will go up. And if my vitality goes up, it'll be easier for me to live the kind of life, be the kind of person I want to be. If I'm not doing some of that and I find myself being the kind of person I don't want to be, and then I beat myself up mercilessly over that rather than being gentle with myself, I get an entirely different set of consequences or actualities. You know, I'm in the position in my job, in my life, where I get to have all these different people who come in and tell me things they don't tell me. Their husband, their wife, their best friend, their lawyer, their lover, their judge, their priest, but they'll tell me. And so what that means is I have a perspective on what people's lives are like, on the average person's life is like, and what the extremes are like going out one side or the other, away from the middle path, that many people don't have. And just like we were talking about last week with that image that came to me about how we all have the same issues, but the things that separate from seeing my issues, one set of issues might be, you know, very thin, and I might be able to get at those issues quite easily. And some of the other issues that I have, there might be a still reinforced concrete wall between me and seeing my issues that clearly.
Yes.
We all have the same issues. So what I'm learning from 49 years of doing therapy is we all have the same issues. And we all have the same kind of pattern of what happens in our system when we deplete it emotionally, or we deplete it in terms of nutrition, or we deplete it in terms of sleep, or we deplete it because we focus on negativity rather than the positive that's always there. Sure, there's negative there, but like this lesson that I was just reading, or this essay I was just reading from Christian Sundberg's work, if I focus on a certain thing, I get more of that. If I focus on a certain perception of mine, it becomes more and more real for me. That's how the system works. That's how we create these, what he calls, rich constraints. And what are those there for? They're like the weights in a gym. Can you make a fist with your hand, have your arm straight out in front of you, make a fist with your hand, and then curl your arm back till your hand touches your shoulder? Most people, yes. Okay. Can you do that 50 times? Absolutely. Can you do that with a 5-pound weight in your hand? Maybe. Can you do it with a 25-pound weight in your hand? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So the weight is the thing that makes the action that I say I want to do more and more difficult. And if I do that in a programmed way over time, my arm gets stronger. My ability to curl my arm toward my shoulder while holding a weight increases. Well, can you be loving? Yes. Give me the sugar that I want and nice people around me and a sunny day. I love the sun. I can be loving. Okay. Now, let's put a weight in your hand. What do you mean? Let's take the sugar away. Let's make it a cloudy, rainy day. Let's have you surrounded by a bunch of people that are crabbing. Can you be loving then? That's what Christian is saying is one of the best ways to look at why we are here having an experience in the physical realm. We are here to grow and strengthen our ability to be more consistently loving in more and more varied, what he calls rich constraints. It's just one way to look at life. Does it help you? Does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel worse? If it makes you feel worse, in our work, we'd say, choose something else. If it makes you feel better, we'd say, keep doing it. Watch what happens. You grow.
There's a situation at my church which is, I've got my eye on it. There's a woman there in her 40s. She's got the most beautiful singing voice, and I've written several liturgical operas with her voice in mind and cast her in them. She's in her 40s. She's about 6 feet tall. She's personality that perfectly fits with my wanting her to like me. It's a kind of, you know, what? It's perfect. It's a perfect situation to come up. And I'm
well
watching
said.
It with
well
this.
Said.
So I know I'm going on a tangent, but in a way, sometimes it just occurred to me that all the issues that I've been moaning and groaning about, like having a person live downstage, which is a very interesting new situation that brings up some very old, dried-up prejudices that I grew up
right,
with.
But it isn't even a situation so much as it is a choice you've made.
Oh, shut up about that. Stop laughing and tell me what you mean. Cause I'm
well, it's like so, a situation is like a hurricane comes to your
yes.
coastal town, right? That's a situation.
Uh-huh.
But having a person living in your house is not just a situation. It's a choice you made. You didn't have to make
That's
the choice.
That's a very interesting thing that you said, because I didn't feel, yes, I guess I did, but I didn't feel I had a choice. I felt as if his need was so much greater than my wish for peace and, you know, orderliness in the house. That
so you chose.
Yeah.
Because you felt, wish I could go back and quote, I wish I was like a computer, an AI computer, because some of the essays we've read in just the last few days of the show, not over the weekend, but last weekend and now today, they're just perfect to have you pay attention to what you're doing. You're saying that you didn't choose, that this just happened. This is a situation. And when I try to point out to you that it isn't a situation that's happened, it's a situation you've chosen, and how you choose to respond to it, interpret it, is creating your experience of it. And it's just, it's ready-made for helping you see what you've chosen and what you could choose differently if and when you decide to choose differently. This situation where you say, it just seemed to me, well, if you didn't have a choice, that means all these deep spiritual teachings like free will and, you know, all of them are wrong. If you really didn't have any choice. Now, it seems like you didn't have any choice because you were holding on to these various interpretations and conclusions that you made. That his suffering was more important than your peace, etc. His need for relief of his suffering was more important than your peace, etc. You held that. And you acted from it. But if you change that set of assumptions or interpretations or conclusions, pretty quickly you change your experience of it in a way that will either lead you to have him out of your house in no time or will lead you to feeling more loving and peaceful even though he remains.
You know, I go back and forth over the both those areas, just the way you say. I feel as if I'm on a fence and I can just practically choose, and I'm hoping this diet will help me choose the better thing. And why am I doing all this? Because I want to be a good person. Bottom line, I want to get to heaven. You know, it's all selfish. Selfish. What else choice? We have a body and we think we're separate, so we have to make the best of bad choices. Or
we have to make our best choices within these very rich constraints, to quote Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, his book is just so, I was thinking again how the Way of Mastery and Course in Miracles and the Way of Love was like laying groundwork for his book. And then we can go back the other way, and he will have laid the groundwork to be able to understand those other books better and hope to grow in the meantime.
Quite probably. But
anyway,
the idea is we need do nothing, right? And you just said here was a situation in which as you looked at it, based on your history and your desire to get to heaven and be a good person and all of this, you interpreted the situation as though you didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that were the case, then you did need to do something and you didn't have freedom and it all just happened to you. However, there's another part of your mind that can, you know, quite clearly, logically say, oh, that's not the way it works, because I'm not the only person that knew that Michael was homeless. Right? It's not like I'm the only person that knew Michael was homeless and I'm the only person who could do anything about it.
Well, in a funny way, I think that's true because we have a big basement, and most people don't have big basements.
No. That, it's all just thoughts on your part.
Okay.
The fact of the matter is, you are not the only person who had a house, who had a spare room, who knew that Michael was homeless. And so other people knew that same thing. Other people had resources that could have given him a place to stay, and they didn't choose to. You chose to. And your mind wants to tell you you didn't have a choice. This essay from today, essay 14, is just one to just read again and again and again. Why? Why specifically, okay. Susan, today? Because it says you can take back your power. You've never lost the power. You've only convinced yourself you didn't have it.
I associate power with being mean and making demands.
Good. That's a good thing to do some worksheets on. It's got nothing to do with that.
Okay.
What it means, the way that Christian Sundberg is talking about it in Lesson 14, what it means is just being aware of the truth of what happens when you shift the focus of your awareness. The power of mind energy, as Michael Rice would call it, the power of your intention and your thought to create your experience. That's what it has to do with. It doesn't have anything to do with being mean. It has to do with being awake to the truth of your life and not projecting it onto or blaming it on someone or something outside of you, which would be what Michael Rice would call, you know, is the definition for a codependent thought pattern or a relationship.
Oh, boy. That makes sense. Oh, this is a big mess.
In your mind?
Making total sense. Yeah.
But
no, what you say and what I've been doing seems like a mess. I'm following what you're saying. I don't mean to sidetrack.
I'm just trying to give you an opportunity to get more clear about how you're making it seem like a mess. What do you mean it's a big mess?
Several worksheets lining themselves up.
Well, and I would certainly encourage you to do a worksheet or two on the idea or some journaling about Michael Rice's targeted journaling, what he calls the mind shifter, on the concept that you have equated power with being mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's a rich topic to do some exploration on.
Yeah.
Is the sun mean?
All right.
Is an oak tree mean as it grows and displaces soil so that its roots can grow and thicken? And so that thought pattern, belief, interpretation, observation, whatever you want to call it, is really worth exploring. How is it that you have associated in your head that power is connected with being mean?
I don't know, but that's a big one, and it's a good one to, okay, I've written down, I'll create a mind shifter out of it.
Well, do you remember
it,
Michael,
is safe and healing.
About word links? Remember Michael talks about word links?
Yeah. Yeah.
That might be a better thing to do, right? Do a little bit of journaling about how you believe power is the same as being mean, and then explore the current word link and then create one that is more accurate or more flexible, and then practice a new word link for power.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah, I had a talk with Michael last night, and we've hired him at our church to do a gig with another musician. And I said, Michael, what do you just want? You know, what if you could have anything? And he said, I don't know. I just want to be left alone. I thought, whoa, I don't know how I can work with that. But that's his biggest wish, I think, is to just be left alone.
Especially since you let him live in your house.
I know.
Yeah, I just want to be left alone. But I want you to supply my housing.
I know.
Yeah, it is really amazing how distorted our thought patterns get and how far from actuality they are when we look at them from a distance. Right? You've got them, he's got them, we've all got them. One of yours is power is meanness. Power means being
totally
mean
is.
To somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's just silly. And then he wants to live in your house and have you provide housing for him and just leave him alone and have no interaction and have no responsibility. That's amazing. How does that work? How did he get this mindset, belief system, thought construct that says the world owes him all of this comfort without any effort on his part? People owe him space in their house without civility and without contribution and without connections, you know, emotionally or whatever. How did he get that thought? It's amazing. But it's also a really good thing for us to do when we want to sort it out, how we create this upset in our lives, to sort out how disjointed, illogical, separate from actuality these thought patterns are.
And that I can't do anything about his thought patterns. I can only do something about my own.
Exactly.
And this seems like a tall order.
Well, but and you don't have to buy into his thought pattern.
That's true.
I really just need to give him his space and leave him completely alone. You don't need to buy into that.
Yeah.
He's living in your house. Right? And you have the right to say, look, if this is our house and we have these minimum requirements, and if you want to comply with those, you're welcome to live here. And if you don't, you're welcome to go find another place to live.
Now, there you've crossed over into mean, and I know you're not being mean. I know,
no, that's the thing.
Look,
come on. If somebody's standing on top of a 5-story building and they say, I don't want to believe that gravity's real. In my world, there's not going to be any gravity. I'm going to try and shout them down or restrain them or, you know, call somebody to put a big mattress at the bottom because I know that they're not going to be able to just float off the top of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to buy into their distorted belief system that says gravity is not real. And that's not mean on my part, but I want to believe gravity isn't real. I want to be able to walk off a building. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to buy into that. I don't have to just sit by and watch them plummet and then have all the negative consequences. There's nothing mean about that, to my way of thinking.
You know, I realize we're talking about some very rudimentary things, but I am still, I need this. So I appreciate your spelling it all out, because it's making sense.
Well, but we all do. Because the rudimentary things that we haven't mastered at deeper and deeper levels will always be part of what happens when we get triggered. They'll always be part of what we're dealing with every time we get triggered.
Yeah.
You know, none of us is so advanced that we never have to deal with the rudimentary things, because it's the rudimentary things that make up our day-to-day existence. And every time I get triggered, that means I've got a blind spot that's been activated, and I'm going to try to pretend that what's true isn't true. Or I'm going to try and pretend that what isn't true is true now or might be true someday.
And okay.
That's accurate for all of us. It's not just somebody who is, you know, really deeply wounded or has never done any spiritual work and how silly of this person. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many years you've been on the planet or how much spiritual work you've done. You can pull a bonehead move from your blind spots.
I'm going to have to put down somewhere the idea of an elephant that changes color when he sneezes. Where did you get that?
That's just what came to me today when I was doing the reading. I think it was a 17-headed elephant that changes color when he sneezes. I know he had more than one.
Do all 17 heads sneeze?
Oh, no, just anyone who sneezes and they change color.
Well, this is great because you've got me right on the edge of getting it. I get it. Even for you to say, what? He says he wants to be alone under your roof, you know. And I
while
say,
you provide him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the teenager that wants the car and that wants the phone and that wants to come and go when he or she pleases and doesn't want to do any chores and okay.
God. So the equation now is so I have to get mean. And I know that's just what we're talking about, and it isn't.
That's
word link.
That's where your word link, right. That's where your word link might help you. And or some journaling, not even targeted journaling, but the journaling about how did you come to believe that power is the same as meanness?
Mm-hmm.
Or,
well,
you know, instead of, you know, that the idea is the kind of word link you might, you know, move into, you might get out of essay number 14 from Christian's book where he's saying, the power is just the truth of what is, right? This isn't...
Oh, wow.
You have the power. You can pretend you don't. Right? You can pretend that your consciousness isn't creating this or that other effect, but it is, and it does, and it always will. It's always on. That creative force is always on. And so, you know, your word link might be something like, power is accepting the truth of what is.
Think of the word agency. Centered adult agency. Just the right to take up space on the planet. Just the right amount of space. The space I can take up. All of that stuff is linking up with this word good power. Real, effective power.
Oh, but power isn't bad or good. It's just what is. And so if you have that, if you're going for a word link, you know, you would be going away from judging it as good or as bad and being in that neutral. Just, you know, how do you tap into what you can do by paying more attention to what you actually can do?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So, I don't see any Michael or Jeannie anywhere near the switchboard, and we've already exhausted our hour. So thank you for your comments and
thanks
questions.
Thanks, too. This was great. Thank you very much.
All right. I hope it's of value. I'll mute you so you can listen to whatever happens during our second hour. And I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will hope that in the very near future, I'll be able to welcome Jeannie Rice. Is that, or maybe Michael will pop in. I'll hang up. Maybe Michael can get on. So we are waiting for Michael and or Jeannie. I hung up as host so that if Michael's trying to get in, he can get in more easily. And I will attempt to send a text to Jeannie Rice. In the meantime, please remember that coming up tomorrow, we have a support group from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and also on Thursdays. I don't believe I have gotten something from Jeannie asking me to play a file, but we'll see what happens. I have sent a text message. Susan Bingham, are you there?
I'm still here. Yep. I was going to write to Jeannie too, but I'm glad you did.
All right, there is Michael Rice on the line. And if he's there, he's muted, but he shows up on the switchboard.
Yeah, we've got some technical difficulties here on this end, and Jeannie's trying to get in. We're trying to figure out what's going on. It's not letting her in, but I'm here, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, I hung up so that you could get on as a host, and I signed on as the as a listener.
Awesome. Well, Jeannie is having difficulty. Let me just check with her.
So, again, any information you might need to join us on Tuesday or Thursdays in the support groups is available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And you back, Michael?
I am, yes.
I need to hand this.
Dialing in.
So I made it this time.
But I got it.
There she is. Oh. There she is. All right.
Bless sweet boys.
Have a wonderful
Have a blessed one. Lots of love. Hardy, bye-bye.
Oh, man. That was challenging. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, April 17th, 2023, and our call-in number, hopefully it works for everybody else, is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. So, welcome, Michael. Are you there? You're talking, but I'm not hearing you through the switchboard. I can hear you through the wall.
See you through
Technical
the wall, but not
challenges.
Through the window. Okay.
Yeah, there you are.
No, that was just my mute button.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, hopefully everybody else can get dialed in easier than I did. I had to do it like 5 times, and it wouldn't even ring through.
Strange.
But we're here.
We are, for sure. So welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here. We'd be rocking along. Jeannie went out and yesterday went like a child of 4 to play at Dollywood and ride on bears and trains and all kinds of things. Tell us about it, Jeannie.
Well, it was awesome. It was a friend of mine that we had not been able to get together for some time, and I picked her up at 8:30 yesterday morning, and I think we talked until 8 o'clock last night, but it was a fun day. We talked a lot and rode just a few rides, not very many, nothing wild, and watched a lot of shows, but it was just a good time getting with a friend and getting re-energized and doing something that I didn't have to think about. Just had fun.
Yes, you've had so many details to handle. It's been crazy. And I acknowledge you for the energy and the stick-to-itness you've had to handle all those details with me having been out of town and coming back and Dad passing and funeral and brothers and sisters and family vacation or family gathering. Just all of it's been pretty bizarre. But here we are, and appreciating the fact that we are in the world, the one between our ears and the one of actuality, and hopefully becoming more and more attuned to that actuality and willing to drop the one between our ears that seems so insistent that we have to live according to its dictates, that we can weaken its voice through forgiveness, that is perception's voice, and bring a new mind into awareness. So pretty sweet process in doing it. I was talking, well, let me check first if we've got anybody with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room, sweetie, or any questions from the app before I move into this other topic.
Well, we have a young lady that we were working with on Friday, and she's on the switchboard.
Oh, awesome. Cecilia. Yes. Let's come back to Cecilia.
We were going to complete her worksheet. So welcome, young lady.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
How has your
weekend
gone?
So glad you're there.
So am I.
If you've ever crammed for exams that you didn't study for, I've been doing it all weekend with these worksheets, and I listened to the show over and over again. I took notes. I wanted to get it, and I feel like I've more than I ever have gotten it from knowing you guys for a long time, like I have.
Nice, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That the seemingly insane idea of canceling a goal for the very result that you want. until we get how the mind works. I mean, it's just bizarre to do that. And then once you understand and you get to drop into those deeper and deeper levels, it's just it's amazing. And all the beliefs that we can hold in our mind, all the things we've been shown and taught that are true only in the world of perception. And we've been fooled into thinking that what perception shows us could possibly be the truth when we really recognize it for what it is all perception is a reflection of something from the past. And to really truly come alive in this moment, independent of perception, it's quite a task. It's quite a journey to make.
I was watching a video of you explaining forgiveness. It was a outside the box thing,
right?
Okay. And
that medical interview I did with the medical office up in Kingsport. Yep.
No, this is a young guy and his last name is Rogers. I forget his first name.
Yeah, his dad is a medical doctor, and he's I think he's the CEO of their medical clinic, and he does that as part of their— that's how we got connected with them, through their medical clinic and him wanting information on the forgiveness process and how it ties in with the Avicen and all.
So what clicked
for you as you were watching that?
Everything. So my mind likes to take a million notes because when I hear it, I can't really hear. You were talking about the ear when you first started the show. You know, my hearing is trying to get tuned in to what everybody's saying. And I've heard you say this stuff, and I've known you guys since I was probably...
Been a long time.
Yeah. So I can get a little bit here and there, and it's deep stuff. You know, so even hearing it again, I like the fact that he's really, really like, I can tell he's just wide open to hear everything that you're saying. And I just still have to feel like a beginner a lot of times. What I hear you
well,
saying.
You know, over 50 years of working with people with this directly, my take is that if someone's sincerely doing their work, it takes 5 to 10 years to begin to understand what we're talking about. And I'll offer that for me, you know, and I say this often, I feel like the most important work and insights that I've had have happened to me in the last 2 years, and I've been doing this for 50 years. And it's like, I can remember a point back a few months ago, it's like, oh, I'm finally starting to understand. It's like, ah. So it's definitely a process. But
I'll tell you, it's so much nicer to finally go, hey, I think I'm getting this. I think I'm getting this, you know? And then.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it's like, all right. Sitting here this weekend, cramming for my doctorate exam. It's, you know.
right.
You know, so, no, it's been worth it. And I can tell you, you wanted me to do a worksheet on, at least I think you wanted me to do it, but then I think you wanted me to wait until today to go over the worksheet when I, at the very last minute of Friday, when I was sharing, you had said, now I want you to say you canceled the goal to your house, selling your house, selling, but with sincerity. And I'm like, that bugged me, right? Go ahead.
And you've never been bugged before, right?
Oh, no, I'm always bugged. I feel like, you know, they say some people are really sensitive, and I used to think that, but it's no, some people really don't want to deal with actuality, and that would be me, right?
So, that's true.
But I do want to deal with it now. And when you were saying that about, I said, well, I was trying to prove to you or me or somebody that no, on Friday. I said, I wouldn't lie to my true self. And I thought you would really, I thought I would fall for that, right? And so I really thought about it over the weekend, and I thought, no way. I have used, I don't use any drugs or anything or alcohol or anything. There was a time in my life I did use alcohol, but that was like at 30 it stopped, right? But I didn't stop piling goal upon goal upon goal I could never reach, and then I had another goal, and still the other goal didn't cancel that one, to achieve things, right? So that I didn't have to go underneath what those goals are bringing up for me, okay? So I feel like that was my addiction for the last 35 years, is the goals that I used to avoid at all costs dealing with what was underneath them and what came up with them.
Yeah.
So with that, I realized that I do lie to my true self, okay? I don't even let myself be my true self, you know? So, of course, I'm going to lie to my true self. I don't even believe it, you know, that I wouldn't lie now, because, you know, I've got to do work to get underneath all this stuff, give up the goals, and deal with what's under them. And cool, I'm finally willing to do it. I'm finally willing to get sober from all these goals, right? I mean,
awesome.
I know we're supposed to probably have good goals too, but anyway. So, anyway,
well,
that's...
yeah, two things about goals. It's one, once you set one in your mind, there are only two ways to get rid of it. You either accomplish it or you cancel it. And so most people live under so much stress because they've got literally a lifetime of goals, and they've got an avalanche of goals from their genetic history. Every unachieved goal of anyone in the bloodline is still in our genes if it's never been achieved or canceled. And that's why oftentimes people will, you know, say and do crazy things. And when you say, well, why did you say, oh, I don't know. Somewhere in there, there was a goal that drove the mind to pop that crazy thing out that doesn't even sound like me. And when I get acquainted with that and I start to cancel those goals, and, you know, the other thing to get is the goals are wonderful. They're an awesome thing to have. It's just if we don't manage them properly, we end up under such enormous amounts of stress and we lose our sanity.
So my goals,
when all that stress is active,
generated a lot of like terrible feelings, right? There are goals that a lot of them generate terrible feelings, but that is, and again, a gift to heal those things underneath it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the goal to sell the house is still just a surface goal, because the real goal that's underneath is creating the stress has more to do with survival, has more to do with, I have to have enough money. I have to be able to survive. I have to be able to pay my bills. And while it seems counterintuitive to go, so I'm going to cancel my need to pay my bills? That's crazy. Yeah, I'm going to cancel my need to survive? But that's ridiculous. Not if I have a file in my mind on survival that's filled with drama and trauma and death and suffering. Because whenever I load a goal into my mind that resonates that file, then I'll go into that pain and trauma of death and suffering. So I cancel the goal, not because there's anything wrong with the goal for survival, but to clean out that file in my mind so that I'm not playing in the arena of past unresolved energetic patterns.
Yeah.
And then, so there's so many levels and so many layers to it.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be playing with you with that again.
From on this? do you ever take a vacation from going to,
well,
you know,
usually when we go on vacation, usually when we go on vacation, it's to go to the next level of doing our work. Although we did have a family vacation just a couple of weeks ago, and two of our sons and their wives showed up with babies, and there was a lot of really sweet and awesome baby time. And my brother also came and visited, and that was a whole week of just playtime. And the only goal I really needed to cancel pretty much throughout the whole week was when my son was leaving and our granddaughter, who's now 6 months, was the goal to say, well, Michael and Jamie, you cannot take that baby home with you. That baby's coming to Bristol with us. Had to cancel that goal. You know, which is like, got to a new level of connectedness with this little one at 6 months. That, you know, you just look at her and grin, and she just feeds back the biggest grin, and the arms and the legs are going, and the excitement and all that. So it was a pretty sweet week.
Yeah. So I'm just reporting back that I've been working on my stuff that we talked about on Friday, and I'm glad I am. That's all. And I still cancel my goal for my house to sell. I haven't heard from my realtor. And I'm not feeling a heck of a lot of stress about it.
Good. Well, and clearing out that out, you get to recognize that, you know, that's not the source of your wealth. The source of your wealth is connection to being and creatorship. And so, you know, in that space, you can open many pathways for the wealth that you need to come to you. It doesn't have to be limited to that one that,
right,
until we resolve the trauma, it keeps jumping up in our face and getting our attention and pulling us out of what we really are as creators.
Well, meaning that I don't have to hang on to the house selling to feel the wealth of the kingdom of heaven.
You got it. You got it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, you know, Yeshua talks about it, and he says, so when you get that, and actually the words the kingdom of heaven are very mistranslated from the Aramaic, it's the community of love. Once you tap into and live as love in a community of love, then what he says, then all things are made unto you. Now you're restored to your creative power, and you're not limited to that one source that you thought it had to come from. Doesn't mean you can't have it from that source, but you also realize that, you know, all things are made unto you, and you go to a whole different place of centeredness and peace and creativity.
Yes.
Cool. Well, is there a piece of work to do today? Any particular question that's up that we can support you with, or where to go from here?
Just what you said just a second ago, I still had a bill double in Phoenix that I found out today. It doubled my power bill. And I'm like, but I'm not living there. And the girl couldn't tell me why at the power company. And so I felt some, you know, like fear in there, like I'm not even living there. And it started coming up again. You know, the house is not selling, you know, and, you know, when is this going to stop? And so I could work through that with you, you know.
Okay.
So, all right.
And, of course, on a practical level, have you got somebody you can go and visit the house and see if there's something, you know, did the realtor leave and turn the heat up, leave the heat up at 90 so it's running continuously?
Yes, I was going to call her and with that exact thought. But I didn't feel compulsive about calling her when that came up. I thought, I'll get around to it. I'll ask her. But I was really wanting to prepare myself for the show and get clear about everything that I've worked on.
Sounds like you're getting clear of living in crisis. Yeah, it sounds like you're getting clear of living in crisis. When I think back, if you remember that first worksheet back, and I think it was Dayton back, 25 years ago, and I gave you the hat. life was crisis, and, you know, we've touched in a few times over the years, and maybe you're just finished with having to do life out of crisis and just do it out of a centered, connected space of peace. I know you've worked in many arenas to bring that forward, so it sounds like maybe you're getting there.
Well, you know, we can work on what came up for me with that $20 more a month that of a house I'm not even living in or using. And I don't know why the power doubled. So I will clear that up with my realtor. I don't know if I have to do a worksheet on it. I don't know. I mean, surely I want
to. I may have to do a worksheet on your power bill. If your power bill doubled and it's only increased by $20 a month, I wish I had a power bill that could double and would only increase by $20 a month. You know, we haven't been in Heartland in 4 years now because of COVID, and our average electric bill is still $500 a month.
Yeah.
So it's just part of the process.
Okay. So maybe I would like to tell you that this is why I didn't want to connect with when you would call the six times that I just dropped out of the picture. Is that the stuff that I was taught, and I was so attracted to the teachings, the spiritual teachings, that they were they meant the world to me. I've never heard such stuff, and sometimes you say things that are almost exactly like it, but it takes a different turn to it, different wording, different, and of course, everybody's going to have different stuff. Everybody's on their own evolutional sphere, wherever. But when I hear it, I start to get confused. Like, oh no, now I don't know. I mean, I did fall in love with
one of the steps in healing.
Is what?
Confusion's one of the steps in healing.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
if you're in a, let's say, a limited space, and all of a sudden comes unlimitedness, you have to open that limited space, and whatever's in it's going to start to move, and it's going to create confusion. That's just a part of the healing process. And ultimately, you know, it's interesting, if you look at the Course in Miracles, it talks about how there are no answers. There are tools with which you can create an experience. But if we're looking, you know, words, you know, the Course talks about, what, one, perception is a construct of the mind. Words represent the constructs of the mind, perceptions. So let's say there's an actuality in the world. Let's say a person. And so that person stands in front of me, and my brain generates an image called a body, and I think that person is a body. When if I could see who that person really was, I'd see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, light, and who knows what else. But I limit it to a body, a perception, a construct in my mind. And so what the Course talks about is, so that's a symbol of actuality, that construct that I call a body in my mind. Then I name the body Harry, Bill, Joe, whatever. And now I have a symbol in my mind of that person, what I call a body, and then I have a name that is a symbol of that body. So now I'm two generations away from the actual experience. The Course and all of this work isn't trying to set it up so that we can explain the truth of anything, because words are symbols of symbols twice removed from what's actually true in the world that the Creator created. So just for the words is to guide us into the tools that open the space for that direct connection, the experience, not the answer, the experience. And if we give words any other power, we give words the power to describe the truth, we're lying to ourselves. Because symbols of symbols are never going to represent what the actual truth is. But if I'll use the tools to collapse perception, then I can go more deeply each time into a direct experience until that person who's standing in front of me, I now, without access to my senses, have a direct experience of that person. Now we've got real life, now we've got real relationship, and now we're actually alive.
So when you say
then
direct
the trick
relationship,
is,
go ahead.
Yes.
No, you go ahead. The trick.
Well, so then the trick is to maintain that live actual connectedness with that person. When perception wants to come in, you know, when they step on our psychic toes or our psychological toes, and perception wants to come in and go, oh, look what they did to me. Rawr. How do I maintain my aliveness when the past holds unresolved pain?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to do. So then Yeshua comes along with this tool of forgiveness. So here's how you collapse into the root of your pain, so that you can bring your pain, the Course says it really clearly, says bring the world you do not want, the one of pain, to the one you do, to the active presence of love. And when those two things meet, whatever's not true about what I hold to be true begins to dissolve. And that's where the confusion happens, because yesterday I was able to hold on to this post and go, this is actuality. This is it. And then I realized, no, that's just another construct of my mind, and I can't hold on to that one. And that's where, you know, confusion becomes a part of the healing process, as you, each time you go into deeper experience of yourself as your created essence, the truth of who you are, and the same thing with the people around you.
Mm-hmm. Are you experiencing other people when you drop all the your perceptions and all that? Are you experiencing them as they're who they really truly are? Love? Is that what you mean?
That's it. That's the idea.
Yeah.
That's one of the lessons my granddaughters most efficiently taught me.
Uh-huh.
Is that in order to support her, in order to be, to play the role of her grandfather as a grandfather should be in her life, that the only job I have is to stand in and connect it as a space of love and only see that about her, so that out of that space I can help to draw her into her body-mind unit, into this world as an awake, aware human being called love, living through a structure, rather than, you know, either her or I reacting out of old traumas, you know, unresolved generational patterns in her or me, and playing that out again. Like, that's not my place. That's not what life is or what life is about. But to really just see her as who she really is. And if her body, her mind, or her mouth do something that resonates something less in me, my job is to move through that fast so I get back to being the space of love for her. Being a human being.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that's, I wonder how many people do that with their children or their grandchildren. Hopefully a lot more than I know.
Hopefully, I'm sure join you in it. And that's why I put it out every once in a while. I'll just post, you know, I've kind of written that what I've learned from my granddaughter up, and I'll post it on Facebook and invite other people to just realize, you know, to some degree, I knew this when I was a father, when my kids were small. Certainly not. I wish I had known it when they were small to the degree that I understand it now, but I didn't. I wasn't that far along in my own personal growth and my own personal process.
Yeah.
So now one of my purposes is to put it out there so that people can at least conceive of, oh, gee, I could be going in that direction. Well, gee, my family system says, well, what I'm supposed to do when they do something they're not supposed to is yell at them and correct them and make sure they do it right. You know, that's what my family system always did. That's what I thought was proper. And now I realize how insane that is.
Yeah.
But that's the state of our minds. And, you know, hopefully as more and more people jump on board, Yeshua, the physicist, said a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, and he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about us as human beings, that when enough of us actually show up as love, the leavening that changes everything in the world, everything in our physiology, everything in our mind, our emotions, our relationships, and in the world. But the leavening has to show up, and to do that, we need to realize who we are. That's why the first line of the worksheet now is, and that's a new addition since last time I think you were around the worksheet, is I proclaim who I am, who am I, who am love. Like, starting off with that, because the world hasn't, that's not what the world's told us we are. At least not many people I've ever met were told, well, actually not anybody I've ever met was told that.
Right. I wasn't either. But, you know, like I said to you on Friday, besides your work, I do a lot of other work. And the spirituality groups of people that I've been connected to, you know, but they don't do any, you have to really, really like meet requirements inside the inner circle so that you can learn all these yoga healing things and all this kind of stuff. Okay, so I haven't gotten that far anyway, but so I reached outside to, like, the topic is Satchitananda, okay, being consciousness and bliss. That's who we are, right? All right, okay. You get Satchitananda, word, S-A-C-C-H-I-T-A-N-A-N-D-A. It's being consciousness and bliss, being bliss, okay? So when I was 30, part of my thing to stay sober instead of going into AA was listening to this tape by Sri Swami Satchitananda, who was the guru of Woodstock, okay? He showed up there when Woodstock was going on. For Woodstock. Okay, but anyway, I found him when I got sober because somebody said, I said, I can't go to AA because I have all these issues. I'm going to be abused. So they said, just go to a bookstore and find something that talks to you. And I found this tape, cassette tape that said, find inner peace meditation. Okay, so
one of these things on that tape I wrote out, and it's a goal, okay? But I didn't stick with that goal. I didn't know about good goals then, and I had too many bad goals I wasn't dealing with. I mean, not bad goals, but wasn't wanting to have any goals because I didn't like what came up for them, you know. So and I didn't know how to deal with it at that time. But this goal lately, that self every night and every morning before I go out and around people, you were talking about being being who you are, nature, love, when you're around your granddaughter. And I want to be around, I guess I need more worksheets, but I want to be, and I feel like I've been successful being around the neighbors or my daughter or whoever. And I have this goal that I got from that cassette tape that I got out not that long ago. And it goes, right. The goal is to realize, this is what he says on it, the goal is to realize my true nature, to realize my peace, my happiness, my godliness. I am the image of God. Always remember my goal. If I understand my goal and dedicate myself to achieving it, I won't get disheartened by failures. The very interest in achieving the goal will take me to it. My spiritual practice is the golden key to open everything, health, wealth, strength. So I would say that every day and even carry it with me so that I would, you know, if my mind forgets it, I just would. What do you think about a goal like that?
Well, actually, there are at least a dozen goals in there. And, you know, goals are wonderful. That actually sounds more akin to a vision than a goal to me. There are goals included in the vision. And so if there's any particular aspect of that I'm holding to and my mind goes into some form of hostility or fear, then I'm going to cancel that goal and process the underlying hostility or fear. Cancel the goal, process the underlying hostility or fear until I can hold that goal, put it in my mind, and there's simply, energetically, there's simply manifestation because there's nothing left in me right down to and including in my bloodline, my genes, mm-hmm. that goes against that goal.
Okay.
You know, to be a creator, we have to have goals. Goals are wonderful things. We're not ever suggesting you cancel a goal because there's something wrong with the goal. You cancel a goal because you recognize when you load it in your mind, it resonates something in your mind that's less than love that needs to be processed through.
Yes. So you said this didn't sound like a goal. It sounded like what?
That sounds more like a vision. You know, you go back to the Aramaic scriptures and it talks about, without vision, my people perish. If you don't have a vision of what, of the highest possibility for your life, then what do you have to turn to but the generational patterns of the past?
Okay, thank you.
And if the vision brings up pieces that need to be healed, then great. Step in, heal them, restore the vision. Step in, heal them, restore the vision. Step in, you know, restore the goal if there's a particular goal until you can load it in your mind and there's nothing in you that goes against it. Now it's a creative act. It's now a creative statement that you're about bringing into form in the world.
Okay, so the other place I get a goal from is I've been involved in Dr. Abraham Lowe's mental health through Will Training, what is it called? Who cares? Anyway, but he was a neurophysicist, psychiatrist in the 20s and 30s, okay? And he was in mental, do you know who he is?
No, I'm not familiar with him.
So he did this body of work that he got kicked out of his own psychiatric practice in a psychiatric hospital in Chicago because it was too way out for everybody, right? He has this way to train people how to change your thoughts, but he doesn't go in and talk about canceling the ones that cause any problems, and replacing them with secure thoughts, right? And so not only does he not have you deal with what comes up when you're saying all these thoughts, he's an interesting person to check out. Anyway, is that you don't talk about the past. It's like the present is the past. Deal with what's going on now, you know. So I just thought you might have heard of him because I questioned to myself if this is really good for my mental health. But the premise and the goals of that organization called Recovery International is our supreme goal is mental health. Our supreme value is outer peace. And our supreme method is self-discipline. So, you know, the more I get into all the other kinds of work like yours, the more I question, is that really what helped me or what? Anyway.
Well, my take would be it sounds like a step up from what's happening in the world. It was interesting. Last night, Jeannie and I watched a video. There's a medical doctor who deals with trauma, and someone who I've worked with to some degree had sent me a link to a movie that he's created, and it's about dealing with trauma and addiction. And it was really, you know, quite powerful, except that the whole premise, I mean, right in the opening minutes of the film, he lays out a premise, and the premise puts the cause of everything outside of us. So The whole premise of the film starts out with denial, and he goes through it. I mean, and he's doing some powerful work in the world. I mean, he's really touched a lot of lives. But as we went through, you know, recognizing that forgiveness is the ultimate tool for removing what never belonged within us, we listened to an hour and 25 minutes of this movie, the whole film, and the word forgiveness wasn't used once.
Mm-hmm.
But there was
A
lot of focus on the drama and trauma of the addicted mind. And He's opening people up to a level beyond what most everybody's doing. And it sounds like that's exactly what that psychiatrist was doing. But that doesn't mean it's the end all of the be all either.
No, I know. I hear you. You know, because
and for
they
me,
say, if I stare at and say something about the past, they go, Cecilia, you're not allowed to talk about anything like that because you have to go by what Dr. Lowe's teachings are. And I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah, except that whatever it was from the past that's coming up now is now the present, and it needs to be processed and dealt with.
Yeah.
That's an important part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
So, you know, to me, and I wish I had been the one who invented and made up and figured out and brought to the world originally the process of forgiveness. But I realized that a mind far, 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 far superior to mine, this man Yeshua 2,000 years ago, had it down pat. And he offered it to the world. And like your psychiatrist friend, they kicked him out because, you know, nobody wants to look at the generations of rage and fear and hate and pain and trauma that we all carry. So any true body of work, anything that's really going to open that space, most people are going to go into resistance to, and they're going to turn and run the other way. So I understand how he got kicked out of his own institution.
Yeah.
Because when you start telling people, and this is essentially what Yeshua does, you know, over the years, why I've watched people run away, you're going to have to face everything in you that's unlike love, and you're going to have to work through it. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you never do that, then the present will always be an effect of your past.
Okay. Yeah.
And therefore, what people do is they live the past over and over and over and over again, calling it the present. And one of the markers for the fact that that's what we're doing is love is not present in us. It's not active. You know, there's a reason they call it the present, because whenever you're there, there's a gift, the presence of active love. And if that's not there, then we're in the past. Even though I look at and I say, well, this is the conversation I had with Bill right now. It's live. It's present. But if I'm playing that all out from a past unresolved trauma that I'm projecting into my brain's image of Bill, I'm just doing the past over and over and over again. And, you know, that's the essence of my book. Why is this happening to me again? Because that's what most people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So nice to have you jumping on the bandwagon and going for it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really think yours is the most powerful teachings that I have, you know, I've wandered around on this planet to find.
Well, and I won't proclaim they're mine. I give full credit to
okay,
where they came from, and that's Yeshua.
Them. You are bringing them here, you know. You
I am
bring
bringing
them
this time around, yes. And,
yes,
and the way they're correlated, I'll hold responsibility for that. But the original idea was his, and, you know, the objective is to make it universally available. That's That's the whole game. Every resource is dedicated to doing that. Whatever needs to be done, that's what we're going to do.
I ask you a question. Since you've been doing this for how many years, it doesn't matter. But do you notice more and more people are gravitating to grab on to this, these teachings?
2,000%. I look back at the early days traveling. I mean, I started out on the road 50 years ago, better than 50 years ago. And, you know, I can't tell you how many places, like, are you crazy? This is insane. And, you know, as the years unfolded in the later years, it didn't matter where you went into even the smallest town in Berg, there was the alternative healing center, and there were people asking the question and thirsty for the answer. So, yeah, I've seen a tremendous shift in the desirability of the work and the when people start to enter into their own darkness and access it, I understand why people run away, because that's not an easy thing to do. And that's one of the reasons why we do the radio show every day, is so that there's a way for people to stay connected with the conversation and to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
So
I was telling
delighted you're on the team.
Yesterday. I'd like to do a radio show like Michael and be like Michael and help bring this, you know, this healing into the world. I mean, you know, and I'm like, you know, Michael's doing that. Maybe I'll come up with something. You know?
So there's probably a Unity Center or a Science of Mind Center not far from you. Start a study group with the tools. Start a Zoom study group with the tools.
That would be nice.
No,
but
go
didn't
for
you
it.
Don't do all that anyway with Zoom and with you did with Unity and you did with I don't know who else you did it with. Is that how you did it?
Yeah, I mean basically what we did until we stopped traveling to come and take care of Jeannie's dad when he got sick about 4 years ago. You know, I've been on the road for over 40 years, and basically I went anywhere on the planet I was invited. We paid our own expenses and our workshops were free.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and that's basically what we did.
Okay.
And so we're shifting that into Zoom, and, you know, we do have some self-study intensives that people can purchase as a way of supporting us, and, you know, we're here to give it away. Whether people have money or not is irrelevant. That's always been the thesis behind it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, they also do some work that is, you know, healing also for me, hello. But, you know, I'll just keep sitting with it and let it guide me because I feel it's very, very strong in me. I have
sweet,
such a
awesome.
All right, well, I'll let you go. Thank you so much.
All right, have a blessed one. Okay, extending love in your direction. Take care. Okay,
bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, Miss Jeannie. Actually, Jeannie, must have your mute button pushed,
Hello.
Hello? Jeannie?
Jeannie's not here, but Roma is all of a sudden.
Okay. Jeannie, you must have your mute button on, honey. You're not coming through. Well, you're not there. Okay. She's going to have to call back in. Hey there. Welcome, young lady. How are things in Hawaii?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, most people call today Monday, right?
Well, in some places it's that, yes.
Yeah.
What is it over there?
Well, I just renamed it. Today's Giggle Day. Last day.
Oh, go for it. Hey.
I have giggled and laughed so many times in the last 40, 51 minutes listening to you, and I was delighted to hear your guest. I'm wondering if I knew her because she and I have Satchidananda in common. I was there in the very beginning when he came to New York, and blessed. I've been blessed. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Sweet.
Yeah, I remember we were doing the you pick up your chin and then you curl your spine upward. And your hands are right below your shoulders and your forehead's on the ground and you start looking up and raising your neck, and I saw orange. All I could see was orange, no matter how far I brought my head up. And then at the top of that beautiful vision of Satchidananda's gorgeous face and long, beautiful white hair. Oh, my gosh. Exquisite, exquisite. Nice memory. I'm just very, very
Sounds
happy.
Like it was a sweet experience.
Oh, very, very. But life is a sweet experience for me these days. And
it's
I'm not
a gift.
Kidding. I just keep laughing. Today's laugh day, you know.
Sweet. Awesome.
Oh, it's wonderful. And something did get triggered for me about 20 minutes ago, having to do with pain regarding relationship. Because I would love
right.
to have a relationship in my life, a love relationship, and I don't. And when you were discussing that with our – what was the – name of the last guest?
Cecilia,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you were discussing that, I suddenly looked. I looked inside and I saw pain, fear. I'm afraid of relationship now because.
So notice where you're holding your physiology tight. Notice
well,
that
my throat
of your palate.
Choking.
Yeah, your throat. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What does that mean?
So,
does that mean?
Well, it means that that's where you're closing up and holding on to that pain. So I'm going to invite you to just breathe into that space.
I stop myself from crying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where you've
God.
Created a veil. That's where you've created a veil.
Right in my neck, yeah?
Yeah.
In my neck. Yeah, really.
So you want to breathe into that and maybe
talk
take one of Satchidananda's poses that was designed to open the tissue around the neck and the head.
Right, exactly. That's the one I was just describing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So maybe
I'm
it's
so
time
grateful.
To get back to that practice and add it to your daily work.
Yeah, I haven't been taking great care of myself. You know, I'm going to be 80 in a couple months. And,
all right.
Yeah.
Rolling space for an awesome eternal day for you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I love hearing you talk about the babies, the experience of babies in your life. It's so beautiful.
It was difficult to allow my son to take his daughter home. It was like, no, she
should
be coming with us.
Yeah, I know you were saying that. I so understand. Oh, my gosh.
And I was saying it half jokingly and half seriously. It's like, Michael, you need to pick up and move to Bristol. And his wife has six brothers and mom and dad. So, you know, not likely that's going to happen. And we've got Aria and not likely we're going
to
be moving.
You were saying that to your son, Michael J.?
Yeah, kind of jokingly, but seriously, like, you need to, this kid's supposed to be coming with us, not going with you. It's like I just created a whole new level
still,
of connectedness.
Is Michael J.
with
still
her.
In Kansas City?
Yes.
Where is he now?
Yeah. He's up in north, he's about 10 minutes south of the airport, and he's still working in the computer field. You know, he left Graham's employ about 15 years ago, and he's gone with a major corporation, and he's kind of their head IT dealing with. They've got offices all over the country, so he's dealing with setting up, you know, security systems and phone systems and door locks and computer technology all across the country for this company, and all their salesmen and all their – they provide or they install refrigeration systems in trucks. So they're like a major organization. And they're awesome to him. He's, you know, especially with the new baby and having gone through COVID, and his mom was ill and was on, had a kidney failure and was on anti-rejection drugs. So when that happened, when COVID came along, they just allowed him to go home and work at home. So he's been doing that now for 3+ years.
Yeah, well, that was so nice. You know, I knew Graham in my day when I was living in.
Right.
When I met you, it was at Unity Village, like 33 or so years ago, and Graham was one of my friends. Yeah. Nice to have things in common with other people.
For sure.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Well, I'm glad you're moving in the direction of joy and opening the next layer and the next level.
Well, yeah, and really the whole issue of love relationship is important for me to realize that. I guess this, I lock, my neck is where I lock the feelings down. Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that what you were saying?
Sounds like that's what it sounds like you identified. That's what it felt like from here.
Yeah.
And you seem to confirm it. So now are you ready to open it? How about a mind shifter?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I
got
my pen
handy.
Yep,
okay.
I do.
It's safe and healing. And I'm ready to receive.
Okay.
Awesome. 5H relationship.
Ready. I'm at ready. I'm ready to...
To receive... An awesome 5H relationship.
What does 5H mean?
Oh, you don't know what a 5H relationship is? That's a relationship that's happy, healthy, healing, holy, and horny. 5H, go for it.
Oh, that's very sweet. Okay, happy,
so
healthy.
Healing, holy, and horny. That's it. We were given the capacity for intimacy for a reason. It's one of the most vitalizing forces in the world.
Okay, I only got 4 of the H's. What was the healthy, happy, holy, horny? What was the other
one? Healing.
Oh, healing. Okay. Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So
thank
I start working
so
with
much.
That mind shifter. Make sure you keep your breath open, and you're going to break through that lockdown that you've got in your neck and up into your sinuses, and let that open, and then, you know, the world is your oyster.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much.
All right, young lady.
Hey,
well,
God bless everyone on the
second.
Call and everyone on the planet and the whole one that we all are in the entire universe of existence.
All right, you have a blessed one. Take care. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.